I've been telling you about this for the last couple days because it just made such an impression on me and was such a wonderful show. The preview production of Far From Heaven, a new musical with book by Tony Award winner and two-time Pulitzer Prize finalist Richard Greenberg, music by Tony Award nominee Scott Frankel, and lyrics by Tony Award nominee Michael Corey, is now underway at the Williamstown Theater Festival's main stage through July 29th. Kelly O'Hara stars as the show's leading lady, Kathy Whittaker. The role was originated by Julianne Moore in the 2002 film written and directed by Todd Haynes. Michael Greif of Rent fame directs the musical, whose cast also includes Stephen Pasquale, Brandon Victor Dixon, and Allison Frazier. Far From Heaven tells the story of Kathy Whittaker, a 1950s housewife living in suburban Hartford, who watches as her seemingly perfect life begins to fall apart. The film echoes women's films of the 1950s, especially those of Douglas Sirk, to tell a story that deals with complex contemporary issues, including sexual and racial prejudice, as does the musical. O'Hara has been nominated for 4 Tony Awards, for The Light in the Piazza, The Pajama Game, South Pacific, and most recently for Nice Work, If You Can Get It, alongside Matthew Broderick, which she will return to following her work here at Williamstown. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Kelly O'Hara to the roundtable, who I think we just lost. All that. Oh, we were doing so good, too. All right. What do you want to do? Want me to keep reading? What do you want me to do? All right. We're going to, that's right. She has to call us. Okay. She called in on the phone, and then we lost her, and now I think she's back. We're talking to Kelly O'Hara. Again, I saw the show on Tuesday night. It's absolutely amazing. Kelly, are you with us?
I am, Joe. Hi.
Wonderful. Thank you. So did you hear all the nice things I had to say about you, or were you off the phone by then?
No, I did not hear. I'm so sorry about that.
Well, that's all right. I just said all the nice things about you and how wonderful the show is and how great you are. It's I saw Tuesday night, and man, it's outstanding. And you are just incredible. How did you come to this project?
Well, first of all, thank you very much. And secondly, Scott Frankel is the composer, and he basically showed up at my house one day, which is not usually how these things work, and sat down at my piano and played me some of the music. And from there, we started working on it, and we did several readings of it, and now we've come to this point. So I feel pretty lucky to have it all wrapped up like that.
Now, give us an idea of the schedule, because I find this to be the most amazing part. I saw you maybe, 3-4 weeks ago in Nice Work, If You Can Get It, and you were rehearsing this show in New York, getting ready while doing that show, so rehearsing during the day, doing your show on Broadway at night, and then you get 2 weeks off and you come up and you're actually performing in the show.
Right. Well, we sometimes make scheduling snafus. I was tracking this up to a scheduling mistake, but now I'm really, really glad that I did it. Just sometimes you really want to do something so much that you make it work with your schedule, and it did end up being a pretty grueling few months just with, the Tony season and everything, opening my show on Broadway and then starting rehearsals during the days in New York for this while still doing Nice Work, If You Can Get It at night. It was very tiring. It has been. But I'm telling you, coming to Williamstown, even if I'm working, there's something about the air here. It's felt somewhat like a vacation, and I'm here with my family and my little boy. So it's definitely been worth it, and working on the project is definitely worth it. So, yes, it's crazy, but worth it.
You also, not to say that you can ever phone it in, but you do a lot of heavy lifting in this show. You are on all the time.
Well, that was another reason why. Well, the reason one, that I was scared about trying to do that all at once, and two, why I wanted to do it. We don't always get roles like that in this business. You kind of wait for them to come along, and if they ever do, you're lucky. And that there's a big journey, and there's a lot to say, and there's a lot to feel, and that's what this is for me. And It's amazing how the adrenaline just takes you through it, and you don't feel how much you're doing as much as, what you get to do, the quality of it. And so by the time the night's over, it actually doesn't feel as much as you'd think. It feels more like a burst of energy. And so, like I said, it feels great, and I'm lucky to do it.
I was at the talk back where the creators and much of the cast, including yourself, were on stage talking to the audience about the work that they were doing. And one of the themes that came up that I thought was interesting of how to define it, of is it a musical, is it an opera? And the idea being, well, they don't want to label it at all. But there is a lot of singing. It does have an operatic quality to it.
Right. I think Scott Frankel wanted that. It also has to do with the cinematic nature of what it's coming from. The you know, based on the Douglas Sirk movies, Todd Haynes' version of it that some of us have seen with Julianne Moore and Dennis Quaid and Patricia Clarkson, which I didn't see. The operatic nature makes that cinematic, that connection through it, you know, keeps it flowing, keeps the music underneath it, underscoring, so that you don't have stops and starts as much. They wanted to touch on that, but at the same time, it's not fully opera because we do have a wonderful book, a play within the musical that Richard Greenberg wrote. So there you have the musical aspect of it. So it's kind of touching on many, many, many things. But what it is really is just trying to tell the story in the best way we can. So labeling it one way or another maybe puts it in a box, and I don't think the creators wanted that. They just kind of want you to have the feel of a story that's passing through a moment in time, and I think that's what they've come up with in their own special way. Singing it is sometimes more operatic, but then other times not. So I agree with it that you can't label it.
There are those moments where that in both acts several times, which is simply called table talk, where you are going back and forth. But then all of a sudden you will hit some gorgeous songs, one being The Only One, which is one of the prettiest songs I've heard in a long, long time.
Oh, thank you. I agree. It's a great song, great duet for the two of the main characters there.
I'm curious. So you were not familiar with the film prior. Did you see it upon? Was it something that they wanted you to see upon taking on the role?
You know what? No one ever. I don't like to watch, especially if they're recent. I didn't watch it only because I knew that this would be a different version of this. You know, it'll be musicalized, so therefore it'll change kind of the pattern in which communication happens. And I'm a big fan of Julianne Moore. I'm a big fan of Patricia Clarkson and Dennis Quaid and everyone in the film. I just didn't see it based on that information. I wanted to give this, and I didn't have a lot of time with this, so I really wanted to concentrate on what I got from it myself first. And then probably I'll look forward to watching it maybe before the next go-round of the show or maybe after that. But I did watch, just to prepare myself for more of a style, I did watch some of the old Douglas Sirk, you know, the Jane Wyman, Rock Hudson versions, just to put myself back in the original concept of these kind of soap opera-ish films, you know, in the 50s, which were helpful.
Right. And this play takes place in 1957 in Hartford, Connecticut. I mentioned, of course, Nice Work If You Can Get It. You were just nominated for a Tony for your role in that show. And there, of course, you're singing some of the greatest songs in the Great American Songbook. And then this is all new. So to me, and this is just an outsider looking in, you kind of get the best of both worlds in that.
That's exactly how I feel. I mean, precisely how I feel. I think it's so wonderful as a singer to pick up old gems that you grew up with or that feel like almost the soundtrack of your life and sing them in a new, fresh way in our show in Nice Work If You Can Get It. Things like Someone to Watch Over Me and But Not For Me and It's Wonderful and all these beautiful Gershwin tunes and do that for an audience and then step, you know, basically do a 180 and take new songs and try to understand them and imagine them going into people's minds like the Gershwins have in some far, you know, date far down the line. That's how they all came about. I mean, there was a time when no one had heard Someone to Watch Over Me. And you have to imagine that. It's hard to imagine that. But that's the way it starts. And so you feel almost a weight or a pressure of bringing something into the world and hopefully making it heard in a way that people want to hear it again. and again and again, and maybe people want to sing and reinterpret. And so this is a kind of a dream as far as being in an artistic place is concerned for me, just feeling both sides right now.
When you see nice work, if you can get it, it just comes off as fun. The whole thing is fun.
It is. I mean, it's an absolute blast. It's, you know, I'm playing such a different kind of role, and Matthew Broderick is hysterical, and we have the secondary characters, you know, Judy Kaye and Michael McGraw. And,
oh, they're great.
They're just great. They won the Tony for the, both yeah. of them won the Tony, and, you know, you're just, I'm laughing all the time, and so then to, I don't know how to explain, most people would say, well, I'd rather be laughing all the time, but as an artist, it's wonderful to step away just for a second and really dig into those darker emotions, if only for 2 weeks, that's perfect. And now I can go back and laugh some more. So it's really they're wonderful departures just to make for brief moments of time, and then you go back and get to, I know for sure that I get to go back and hear the jokes again. So it feels good.
So the show Far From Heaven runs through Sunday. People have the opportunity yes. through Sunday to see you in Far From Heaven. And then you're back on Broadway in Nice Work If You Can Get It.
Mm-hmm.
And then Far From Heaven will go to, what, Playwright Horizons in the spring.
That's right. That's it's slotted to go in, I believe, April and May, starting to run in May probably.
And you'll be attached to that as well. You'll
yes, I am.
Continue doing what you're doing. Well, that's awesome. So nothing wrong with having, you know, your dance car fill for a while.
Believe me, nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to talk to you. I've just been a great fan and admirer of your work, and just seeing the show Tuesday night just blew me away. And I thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk to us. I know you got two shows today, so I really thank you very much for doing it.
Sure, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The preview production of Far From Heaven on the Williamstown Theater Festival's main stage runs through July 29th. You can go to wtfestival.org for more information. wtfestival.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for The Roundtable comes from Lori Ilvesacker, associate broker at Coldwell Banker Village Green Realty. Concierge service for the year-round or seasonal home market in Woodstock, Stone Ridge, and all of Ulster County. 845-679-2255. Hudson River Valley National Heritage Area, announcing Hudson River Valley Ramble, weekends in September, events showcasing the natural and cultural resources of the Hudson River Valley. HudsonRiverValleyRamble.com. And Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com. 10:03.
The Jamal Jackson Dance Company was founded with the purpose of fusing various traditional African dance styles with modern and hip-hop techniques while incorporating diverse musical styles in order to create a technique that is relevant to a diverse community of Americans. Through the company's signature style, which is characterized by looseness in the arms, hips, and spine, fast footwork, and a constant bounce, the choreography weaves together to tell stories that redefine ideas of community and blur divisive lines while still celebrating the beauty of individual cultures. Footprints from My Head's Rhythm, which is one of the coolest titles I think I've heard in a long, long time. Footprints from My Head's Rhythm is a direct representation of the choreographic themes of the core of the company, which, with each piece exploring a different aspect of reconciling the need for people to maintain individuality while being accepted into a community. The company will perform this weekend at PS21 in Chatham, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Jamal Jackson to the program. Thank you very much for coming into the studio. What a delight.
Thank you for having me.
You, man, watching you work is something else. And I assume that this has been a part of you most of your life.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
So at what point does the mission come in? Do you say, okay, I can transcend what I am doing and channel this in a way to satisfy what I just mentioned, these core beliefs?
Well, I think the mission starts right away. I mean, whenever I'm creating work, I think that kind of has to be a starting place for my choreography. from there, it's going to take on many different themes and many different ideas. But I think the idea of bringing people together, but also understanding what makes you as a person stand out, is very important. And so I kind of try to reflect that within all of the work that we do.
But at what point in your life did you get that? That was possible through you and through dance?
Well, I think at different stages, it's developed and it's changed throughout my life. I started dancing when I was about 12, which is a little late for most people, but yeah. 12, I had a teacher come in to school to teach an African dance class. And it just struck me as something so different and so interesting. And it was something different and an experience that I had never seen before or never tasted before. And it really drew me to this idea that there's so many different things out there and that people have something different to offer. So that really excited me from that age. And then within that individuality, also finding that when you start to move with someone, you find this community, you find this relevance to something else. So I feel like that balance is very interesting. This has been interesting to me since when I started about 12.
Hmm. You are going to be performing on Saturday night and Sunday afternoon at PS 21 in Chatham, but you've been here for the last couple of days teaching, right?
Yes, that's correct.
What has that process been like?
It's been wonderful. It's very nice to get out here. I've worked with 7 students ranging from 14 to 18, and I'm teaching some fusion, a little bit of traditional Malian dance with a little bit of contemporary fusion. And it's been really exciting to see the kids get up and push themselves and challenge themselves each day with me. So it's great.
What is the, and this may be difficult to explain, but what is the baseline for you have to be for someone to be able to incorporate these styles?
That is a tricky question. I really think that anyone can do this. And if you really put your heart into it, you know, these kids, they have their own movement language, and everyone will bring that to the table. So the idea is finding a positive way to integrate those styles. So I can give them the base, which is a traditional African background. I can teach that, you know, with my eyes closed. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you're going to say, okay, well, how does this language kind of incorporate and influence your own language? And that's really kind of what we do in the process that my company takes.
There seems to me that there are steps. Like if you outline what it is that you do, which of course you don't, but if you were to do that, of saying, okay, but there's great research and history that is involved in your work as well, right? I mean, you have to say, I'm going to investigate what this type of dance in this culture is before I can interpret it in my way.
Absolutely. One of the examples of that is we have a piece called Next Time, which is this idea of a woman who feels isolated and tries to find a sense of community within the church. And this idea of community is brought to life within the piece by some movement from a dance called Koteba, which is, again, work from Mali. And this dance is traditionally known to really bring the community together, to maintain moral values, and to kind of really teach the younger people in the community what is right and how to do things the right way. And so as we're investigating this movement, it kind of talks about, well, this woman who's isolated and is trying to find this community, what is the right action to take? And so that's how that movement kind of plays within this new work.
When you got started, when did you start to investigate these other cultures and see what was out there?
Well, again, when I started dancing, at the age of 12, 13 is when I was really influenced by that and started kind of investigating different styles of movement. But it really struck me in college where I worked with 2 professors, Michelle Bakulabali and Sedu Kulabali, and I actually went to Mali to study with them there, which was
really...
Did you
go to Brown?
I did go to Brown,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
And... It just fascinates me that because you have your own movement, you have your own style, you have what is you, but it's impossible to say how that is influenced by these other styles. It's sort of, I use this term very loosely, mm-hmm. but a mishmash, right? I mean, it's a little of everything.
Definitely, you know, I take different ideas, and I think depending on really the concept or where the piece is driving, you know, it might have a little bit more of an African flavor to it, yeah. or have this style. Whereas if I'm doing something more you know, in a certain way, more contemporary and pushing a little more forward, then it's going to have, you know, more modern dance flavor to it.
What is there? And I guess this is dance. It's a joyous act, isn't it?
Yes, and it can represent different emotions, but I think for me it's always joyous. Yes.
Absolutely, and I was going to say that because some of the pieces that you do are certainly intense. They have great meaning. They have maybe even a solemn tone, but man, you look like you're having fun.
Yes, well, even in one of the pieces that we do, Supplant, which I created in 2008, it's this idea of feeling misplaced, but there is almost this joy to that feeling of not owning. Being owned by anything.
Yeah. Do you feel misplaced in the dance world?
Sometimes. Sometimes I feel like I have a fit, and sometimes I feel like I'm stretched between two different places. And I actually, again, have a new piece, which I've been working on, which is going to premiere actually here. And it's this idea of, do I fit into this traditional African world of movement, or do I fit into this downtown dance world? And the piece is actually called Downtown to Dogon. And it's this divide in terms of how I create and where I fit into this kind of spectrum of movement.
I love, one of the things I love about artists, I love the artists who, and I use this analogy sometimes of you, this is the old days when there actually were, record stores. But you would have the new CD and the clerk would sit there and they would stare at it and they wouldn't know where to put it. You know, do you put it in pop? Do you put it in country? Do you put it here? Where do you sound? You know, where do you put it? World music, whatever. And that's a little bit what you're going through, that it doesn't have a classification. I don't know why it has to.
Right.
But what you do, it is in some way incredibly freeing, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't think that you have to have a title to what you do. You know, I think if you put yourself there, then you're just going to limit yourself. So.
Well, and you become the title then. It's your company. It's you. And what are the pressures of that?
There's always pressures. But if you're owning, you know, you're going to have successes, you're going to have failures, and that's part of life. I mean, that's part of creating. I don't think, you know, as a dancer and as an artist, you're not saying, okay, this is the product, Jamal Jackson Dance Company. It's kind of, this is the process, Jamal Jackson Dance Company. And so you're going to, you know, along the way, have amazing experiences where something just works. And the idea of combining these two styles or many styles works. And there's sometimes where it won't work. And I think that's part of the process.
To be a dancer in your company, what ingredients must you possess?
Well, you have to be talented, obviously. It's a very energetic and physical style of movement that I create. But you also have to just be open and willing to work with different groups of people. And that's a big part of my company is a family. We have 11 dancers, 3 different drummers who play djembe, dundun, different instruments. And we also work with a drum line, which varies from 5 to 20 students. And so it's really a big community that we work with. And so I think you have to be very open. You have to be patient and you have to be excited about trying new things to be a part of it.
And those drums are amazing.
Oh, yeah. They're great. They get it rocking, definitely.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, the Jamal Jackson Dance Company is performing Footprints from My Head's Rhythm. And that's kind of a moving target, right? That can be the dances that you put in there any given time. That changes?
That theme, that piece is actually, that show is based on this idea of not counting beats or count, but actually just hearing rhythms. And that's where that kind of theme came from. So it's a core of 5 pieces that makes up that larger work.
It's Saturday, July 28th at 8 o'clock, Sunday, July 29th at 2 o'clock, PS21 in Chatham. If you just go to ps21chatham.org, you can find out more information. ps21chatham.org. Jamal Jackson, I thank you so much for sharing your art with us. And God, it just sounds like you're having a great time. And can't wait to see you.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for The Roundtable comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And law offices of Reed & Vella, Delmar, New York, providing legal services in estate planning, estate administration, elder law, and asset protection. 518-439-6001.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3 Albany, W.